Welcome to Zichru Daf Simani. I'm Rabbi Avram Goldhar, and today we're in Sechah Shabbos, Daf Nun Aleph. So the 3 points we're going to focus on. Number one, when it's reported that Shmuel ruled that one may insulate something cold on Shabbos to keep it cold, Rav Yosef wanted to know why Shmuel need to teach this when the Mishnah stated very clearly that it was permitted. Abaye answered that without Shmuel, one may have thought the Mishnah only permitted insulating cold water, which is not usually heated up through placing it under a pillow, and therefore there's no concern that one would heat up the water in this fashion, thereby violating the prohibition of Hatmana. Food, however, which is normally covered by a pillow in order to warm up, would be prohibited to insulate to keep cold, lest one come to insulate it to warm up. So Shmuel is coming to teach that it's permitted to insulate even cold foods as well. Point number two, a braisa states that one may not crush snow or hail on Shabbos in order to make it into a liquid. It's permitted, however, to place them into a cup or bowl of liquid. Rashi explains that the Rabbanan forbade crushing the snow or hail into water because one's creating something new. It's nola, and therefore it has the appearance of a malacha. However, placing them into a cup of wine, as an example, in order to cool the wine in the summer, or into a bowl, is not a problem, since the snow and hail melt on their own, and not as a result of one's direct actions. And point number three, the Mishnah in the fifth parak states that it's permitted to let one's camel go out into a rishus harabim wearing a halter, an afsar, and a female dromedary wearing a nose ring, a chotam. And it's not considered that the animal is doing the malachim hotzah of caring. The reason for this is that since they both serve to restrain the animal, they're not considered a burden. They're not considered a masui, which would be prohibited to carry, but they're considered rather as clothes. Rebbe was asked what the case would be if the restraints were switched, meaning if a camel would wear a nose ring and the female dromedary would wear the halter. So Rebbe responded that it's obvious that the female dromedary cannot go out with a halter since it's a feistery animal and the halter won't restrain it. Therefore, the halter would be considered a burden. Rebbe said the only question is regarding the nose ring for the camel, which is considered an excessive restraint for it. On the one hand, since it's an excessive restraint, it's not necessary, and therefore maybe it is considered a burden. Or perhaps we don't say an excessive restraint is considered a burden. This question will continue on Daf Nun Beis. All right, so let's review. Point number one, when it was reported that Shmuel ruled that one may insulate something cold on Shabbos to keep it cold, Rav Yosef wanted to know why Shmuel needed to teach this when the Mishnah stated very clearly that it was permitted. So Abaye answered that without Shmuel, one might have thought that the Mishnah only permitted insulating cold water, which is not usually heated up, through placing it under a pillow. And therefore, there's no concern that one would heat up the water in this fashion, thereby violating the prohibition of Hatmana. Food, however, which is normally covered by a pillow in order to warm up, would be prohibited to insulate to get cold, lest one come to insulate it to warm up. So Shmuel's coming to teach that it is permitted to insulate even cold foods as well. Point number two, our Bryce states that one may not crush snow or hail on Shabbos in order to make it into a liquid. It is permitted, however, to place them into a cup or bowl of liquid. Rashi explains that the Rabbanan forbade crushing the snow or hail into water because one is creating something new. It's nolat, and therefore it has the appearance of a malacha. However, placing them into a cup of wine, as an example, in order to cool the wine in the summer or into a bowl is not a problem since the snow and hail melt on their own and not as a result of one's direct actions. And point number three, the first mission, the fifth parak states that it's permitted to let one's camel go out into a rishus harabim wearing a halter, an afsar, and a female dromedary wearing a nose ring, chotam. And it's not considered that the animal is doing the malach of hotzah. The reason for this is that since they both serve to restrain the animal, they're not considered a burden. They're not considered a masui, which would be prohibited to carry, but rather as clothes. Rebbe was asked, what would be the case if the restraints were switched? Meaning, if a camel were to wear a nose ring, and a female dromedary would wear a halter. So Rebbe responded that it's obvious that the female dromedary cannot go out with a halter since it's a feistery animal and the halter will not restrain it. Therefore, the halter would be considered a burden. Rebbe said the only question was regarding the nose ring for the camel, which is considered an excessive restraint for it. On the one hand, since it's an excessive restraint, it's not necessary and therefore maybe it is considered a burden. Or perhaps we don't say an excessive restraint is considered a burden. This question will continue on to Daf Nun Beis. All right, so now we go to our simon. So the simon for Nun Aleph is gnaw, like a gnawing beaver, which we're going to connect to a beaver pelt hat. So here we go. The Eskimo family, clad in their beaver pelt hats, were busy in their igloo insulating their cold food and melting ice in their drinks, while their Arctic camel stood outside in their excessive restraints. So once again, in slow motion. The Eskimo family, clad in their beaver pelt hats, that means we're on Daf Nun Aleph. The Eskimo family, clad in their beaver pelt hats, were busy in their igloo insulating their cold food. Which reminds us, when it was reported that Shmuel ruled that one may insulate something cold on Shabbos to keep it cold, Rav Yosef wanted to know why Shmuel needed to teach this when the Mishnah stated very clearly that it was permitted. Abaye answered that without Shmuel, one might have thought that the Mishnah only permitted insulating cold water, which is not usually heated up, through placing it under a pillow, and therefore there's no concern that one would heat up the water in this fashion, thereby violating the prohibition of Hatmana. Food, however, which is normally covered by a pillow in order to warm up, would be prohibited to insulate to keep cold, lest one come to insulate it to warm up. So Shmuel's coming to teach that it's permitted to insulate even cold foods as well. So the Eskimo family, clad in their beaver pelt hats, were busy in their igloo, insulating their cold food and melting ice in their drinks, which reminds us of Brisa states that one may not crush snow or hail on Shabbos in order to make it into a liquid. It's permitted, however, to place them into a cup or bowl of liquid. And Rashi explains that the Rabbanim forbade crushing the snow or hail into water because one is creating something new. It's nolad, and therefore it has the appearance of a malacha. However, placing them into a cup of wine, as an example, in order to cool the wine in the summer, or into a bowl, is not a problem, though, since the snow and hail melt on their own and not as a result of one's direct actions. So the Eskimo family, clad in their beaver belt hats, were busy in their igloo, insulating their cold food and melting ice in their drinks, while their Arctic camel stood outside in their excessive restraints. Which reminds us, the first mission, the fifth parak, states that it is permitted to let one's camel go out into Rosh Hasharabim wearing a halter, an afsar, and a female dromedary wearing a nose ring, a chotem. And it's not considered that the animal is doing the malach of hotzah. The reason is that since they both serve to restrain the animal, they're not considered a burden, a masvi, which would be prohibited to carry, but rather as clothes. Rebbe was asked what the case would be if the restraints were switched, meaning if a camel would wear a nose ring and a female dromedary would wear a halter. Rebbe responded that it's obvious that the female dromedary cannot go out with the halter, with the afsar, since it's a feistier animal and the halter will not restrain it. Therefore, the halter would be considered a burden. Rebbe said the only question is regarding the nose ring for the camel, the chotem for the camel, which is considered an excessive restraint for it. On the one hand, since it's an excessive restraint, it's not necessary, and therefore, maybe it is considered a burden. Or perhaps, we don't say an excessive restraint is considered a burden, and the discussion about this continues on to Daf Nun Beis. So once again, the Eskimo family, clad in their beaver belt hats, were busy in their igloo insulating their cold food and melting ice in their drinks, while their Arctic camel stood outside in their excessive restraints. All right, now it's time for our four blot back chazara. Daf Mem Zayin. So the symbol for Mem Zayin is a maze. A maze. So here goes. The contestants ran through the maze. Maze, that means we're on Daf Mem Zayin. The contestants ran through the maze with hot pans full of ash, which reminds us, Rabbi Zera quotes Rabbi Yochanan, quotes Rabbi Yehuda Anasi as permitting one to move a pan which is not muksa, even if there are ashes on it which are muksa. This seems to contradict a statement from Rabbi Yochanan elsewhere, which implied that if a basket only contained a stone, then it would become a basis l'dava aser, a base to a prohibited object, and therefore be muksa. So why is the pan with the leftover ashes not considered a basis l'dava aser? Rav explains that Rebbe permitted the pan to be moved because the ashes had been anticipated for later use to cover dirt, and therefore the ashes were not muksa. Rebbe's chiddush was that it was permitted to move the pan with the non-muksa ashes, even if there were muksa pieces of wood in it as well. So the contestants ran through the maze with hot pans full of ash, with sparks flying everywhere, which reminds us, the final mission of the parak permits placing a vessel under a lamp on Shabbos to catch the falling sparks. The Gemara asks, why is it permissible to do this, given that the falling sparks would make the vessel under the lamp a basis to muksa, and would therefore be a case of mevatel klum hechano, nullifying the preparedness of a vessel? Rav Huna, the son of Rav Yehuda, answers that nitzotzos ein behen mamish, sparks have no substance, and therefore the vessel is not considered a basis to them. So the contestants ran through the maze with hot pans full of ash, with sparks flying everywhere, searching for the pile of olive gephas to place them on, which radiates heat upwards. Which reminds us, the opening mission of the fourth parak forbids insulating pots before Shabbos with substances that add heat, that are mostly helpful to the food. One of the substances mentioned is gephas, a certain type of pulp. The Gemara wants to clarify if gephas is referring to olive gephas, whose heat is relatively intense, but sesame gephas, which is less intense, would be permitted to insulate with, or perhaps the Mishnah is referring to sesame gephas, and all the more so olive gephas would be prohibited. A statement from Rabbi Zera that prohibited placing a box of insulated food on top of olive gephas was brought to prove that only olive gephas increases the heat of what it is insulating. It's mosif hevel. The Gemara rejects this proof by saying that sesame gephas also increases heat, but it's just not strong enough to radiate heat upwards to the food on top of it, like all of Gephas can. Daf Memches. So the symbol for Memches is a brain moach, and we use Brainiac. So here goes. The Brainiacs, that means we're on Daf Memches. The Brainiacs were busy testing the expensive Mochin fibers as insulation, which reminds us, Ravada Bar Masna asked Abaye a question about Mochin, expensive unprocessed wool that's generally used to produce felt and is therefore considered muksa. He wants to know if Mochin that were used to insulate food Erev Shabbos can be moved on Shabbos. In other words, does the fact that he's now using it for Hatmana demonstrate that he's now permanently using it for Hatmana and not for felt, and therefore it's no longer considered muksa? Abaye answered that just because the person didn't have a box of cheap straw handy for insulating does not mean that he's renouncing a valuable box of mochin. Therefore, the mochin still remains muksa. So the Brainiacs were busy testing expensive mochin fibers as insulation and pillow stuffing, which reminds us, Rav Chisda taught that one can return stuffing into a pillow on Shabbos. He did not consider this a violation of Makkah B'Patish. The Gemara asked from Rav Chisda from a brisa that says it's prohibited to place stuffing into a pillow on Yontav and even more so on Shabbos. The Gemara answered that Rav Chisda was referring to returning stuffing to an old pillow, meaning a pillow that was already stuffed. This isn't considered fashioning a new pillow. The brisa, on the other hand, was referring to new pillows, meaning placing stuffing in pillows that had never been stuffed, which is considered fashioning them into a pillow, which would be forbidden. So the Brainiacs were busy testing the expensive mochin fibers as insulation and pillow stuffing. Proudly wearing their new white lab shirts with neck openings, they were able to open up all on their own. Which reminds us, Rav Yudah said the name of Rav. The one who opens up a neck opening in a garment for the first time on Shabbos is liable to bring a chatas because he violated the malach of Makkah B'Patish. Rav Kahana challenges from a brisa that permitted one to lop off the top of a sealed barrel with a sword in order to open up a barrel to use its contents. So Rabbi answered Rav Kahana, Zeh chibur v'zeh nechibur. The material of the shirt is bonded, while the lid of the barrel is not considered bonded to the barrel. Rashi explains that although the lid of the barrel was cemented onto the barrel, it was done with the intention to eventually remove the lid. Therefore, it's not considered bonded, and cutting it open is not deemed creating a new vessel. As opposed to this, in the case of making a neck opening in a garment, the material is completely attached, and therefore, by making a neck opening, one would be liable for Makkah B'Patish. Daf Mem Tes. So the symbol for Mem Tes is meat, and we use a butcher. So here goes. Winged doves flew over the holy butcher. Butcher, that means we're on Daf Mem Tes. Winged doves flew over the holy butcher wearing tefillin, which reminds us, Rabbi Yannai said that tefillin required the one who wears it to have a guf naki, a clean body, like the standards of Elisha Baal Kanafayim, the winged one. He was called Elisha Baal Kanafayim because of the miracle that occurred when he was chased by a Roman officer during the times when one caught wearing tefillin would have his brain gouged out. Elisha took off his tefillin and covered them with his hands, and when asked what was in his hands, Elisha responded that he was holding dove wings. A miracle occurred and dove wings appeared. Elisha chose dove wings specifically because the Jewish people are likened to a dove in that just as dove wings protect the bird, the mitzvahs we perform protect us. So winged doves flew over the holy butcher wearing tefillin, who invited his customers to come sit down on his hides, which reminds us in the next Mishnah state that one may insulate with animal hides, shlachin, on Erev Shabbos, and whether having insulated with them or not, one may move them on Shabbos. Rabbi Yonasan ben Elazar said that it seems logical that the Mishnah is referring to the hides of a Baal Bais, literally a homeowner, one who has no plans to sell his hides, who doesn't care if they get dirty, and therefore they're considered fit for sitting on, and they are not muksa. However, those belonging to an uman, literally a craftsman, one who plans on selling his hides, are muksa, since the craftsman plans on selling them, and therefore he does care about getting them dirty, and because of that, they're not considered fit for sitting on, and therefore they are muksa. Rabbi Chinin bar Chama said that Rabbi Yishmael, the son of Rabbi Yossi, would say that his father was a professional tanner, and he would have his hides brought out to sit on. So we see from this that even a tanner, one who plans on selling his hides, is not particular about people sitting on his hides. So winged doves were the holy butcher wearing tefillin who invited his customers to come sit down on his hides so he could teach them about the 39 malachas. Which reminds us, the Gemara introduces a discussion regarding what the 39 malachas of Shabbos correspond to. Rabbi Chinin bar Chama said, the malachas are connected to avodas of Mishkan. They correspond to the labors needed to build the Mishkan. Rabbi Yonasan bar Rabbi Elazar said, they correspond to the 39 times the words malacha, malachto, and malachas appear in the Torah. Daf Nun. So the symbol for Daf Nun is a nincompoop, a silly foolish person. Here goes. The nincompoop, that means we're on Daf Nun. The nincompoop piled his wool shearings he was going to use for insulation, which reminds us, the Mishnah stated that one may insulate with gizei tzemer, wood shearings, but they cannot be moved. Rashi explains that wool shearings are typically reserved to be made into thread, and therefore they're muksa. It was said in the name of Rebbe that the wool shearings are not permitted to be moved if they were not dedicated to being used for insulation. But if they were dedicated for use as insulation, they'd no longer be deemed muksa, and one would be permitted to move them. So the nincompoop piled his wool shearings he was going to use for insulation so high that he tripped over the hardened date palm branches, which reminds us, There's a three-way machlokas on Maharim regarding one who harvested charayo shadeko, hardened daypalm branches for firewood, which are muksa, and then changed his mind and decided to use them for sitting on, which is a non-muksa designation. So what's required to release the branches from their muksa status prior to Shabbos? Rav says Koshi must tie them into bundles. Intent alone is not enough. Shmuel says Choshev, he must intend to sit upon them. He doesn't require physical action. And Rav Asi says Yoshev, he sits on them Erev Shabbos, even though he doesn't tie them or consciously intend to sit on them on Shabbos. So the nincompoop piled his wool shearings he was going to use for insulation so high that he tripped over the hardened date palm branches and fell into a batch of sweet-smelling barda. Which reminds us of Memar Mar Zutra and Rav Ashi were sitting together one Shabbos and were brought barda, a mixture containing one-third aloes, one-third myrtle, and one-third violets. Amemar and Rav Ashi washed with it, but Mar Zutra did not. Rav Mordechai explained that Mar Zutra holds that even during the week one's not permitted to wash with it, since he agrees with what was taught in a brisa, that man may scrape crusts of filth and crusts of a wound because of discomfort, but is forbidden to do so if it's to beautify himself. Rashi explains that he would be transgressing the prohibition of lo yulbash ish simlas isha, a man should not wear a feminine garment. Amemar and Rav Ashi washed with it because they held what was taught in a brisa, that a person should wash his face, hands, and feet each day in honor of his creator. And Rashi explains the brisa means that it's an honor to one's creator due to the fact that a person was created in Hashem's image. Furthermore, one who sees beautiful creatures will come to bless Hashem. All right, so now it's time for a pop quiz of 10 questions plus 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. Number 1, which daf do we learn about moving a corpse out of the sun? And the machlokas about tiltum min atzad. That's on daf Mem Gimel. Good. Number 2, which daf do you have the question whether an excessive restraint on an animal is considered a masui, a burden? That's on daf Nun Aleph. Great. Number 3, which daf do you learn about Elisha Balkanafim and the miracle that occurred to him? That's on daf Mem Tes. Good. Number 4, what do we have the Malkos regarding what is required to make Charayo Shadakol, hardened date palm branches, not muksa? That's on daf Nun. Good. Number 5, what is the question what the Lama Tes Malachos correspond to? That's on daf Mem Tes. Good. Number 6, where do we learn that one can definitely insulate cold food to keep it cold? That's on daf Nun Aleph. Good. Number 7, where do we learn the difference between neck openings and barrel lids? That's on daf Mem Zayin. Great. Number 8, which daf do we learn about the importance of washing, which gives kavod to a Kodesh Baruch Hu because we're made B'Tselem Elokim? That's on daf Nun. Good. Number 9, where do we learn that one can put a vessel under sparks and you're not being mevata kli mehechano? That's on daf Mem Zayin. Good. And number 10, where do we learn the halachas of a muchni, a removable wheel of a coach? That's on daf Mem Dalad. Great. Now we go to the 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. Number 1, which daf do we learn that waking up with a pasuk in one's mouth is considered like a nevuah katana, a minor nevuah? That's on daf Nun Zayin. Good. Number 2, where do we have the question whether the nusach of the bracha is ha-motzi lech min haaretz or motzi lech min haaretz? That's on daf Lamed Ches. Great. And finally, number 3, where do we learn what defines an amah aretz? That's on daf Mem Zayin. Great. All right, that concludes our pop quiz plus the 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. This is Rabbi Avraham Goldhammer Zichu wishing you a great day and great learning.